Les colloques du Collège de France.
Okay, it's time to resume. And I'm very glad to welcome Elisa Paganini for the next talk. She's from the University of Milan, and the talk is about fiction as non-committal communication.
Hi, thank you. So this talk is just a presentation of an idea I have about fiction, and I think that the idea I have is quite different from the idea I found in the literature. So the idea of this talk is try to present to you this idea, try to defend the idea and see your reactions to it. So first of all, let me start with an idea which instead I consider to be quite common within the literature on fiction. Namely, the idea that fiction is a way of communicating a propositional or representational content to which an attitude different from belief is to be adopted. This idea has two components. The first component is that fiction allows to communicate propositional representational content. And the second component is that the attitude to be adopted toward it is different from belief. On the attitude, or what is the correct attitude to be adopted, there is debate. I'm not going into it. I'm particularly interested on the first component of this assumption, namely the idea that fiction is a way of communicating a propositional representational content. This is the assumption I want to discuss, and I call it F. Let me try to explain to you why I think that this assumption is to be discussed. First of all, different people interpret fiction in different ways. When we discuss fiction with friends, we may realize that they interpret fiction in a way different from the way we interpret it. Sometimes we may think that their way of interpreting it is inadequate, that may be even correct. But sometimes it may happen that the other interpretation, even if you don't abandon your own interpretation, is an interesting interpretation, something which can be adequately assumed and accepted. So there may be different interpretations, first of all. Second, author of fictions are generally reluctant to explain the interpretation they expect the audience to adopt. This is obviously doesn't happen always, as we have seen in a previous talk, but most of the time the authors of fiction are reluctant to explain fiction on the interpretation of fiction, and they tend to say that they leave the interpretation to the audience. So they seem to allow for different interpretations. And moreover, even when we come across a fiction more than once, which sometimes happens in our life, we may experience the fact that we give different interpretation to the same fiction. And this is not just that we think to be incoherent, but that, for example, our different experience allows us to give a different interpretation to the fiction we are managing to interpret. So those are the main reasons I want to argue against F. And the plan of my presentation is, first of all, to present to you a hypothesis about the reasons for F, namely an hypothesis on why F has been adopted. In my opinion, it may be wrong, but I have this hypothesis. I want to share it with you and confront it with you. And then I will try to explain to you why, in my opinion, F should be replaced by F star. While F is not a definition of fiction, it's just an assumption which is adopted by many theories of fiction, F star is instead, at least in my opinion, a possible definition of fiction. And in the second part, I will defend, I will try to defend F star against objections. So let me start with the hypothesis for the reason of F. At the beginning of the debate on fiction, philosophical concern was mainly directed at written or spoken fiction. And fiction was thought to be false, or at least accidentally true. In my opinion, Lewis' thought experiment is relevant on this regard. You will remember the thought experiment of Conan Doyle being accused of revealing secret information about a real person called Sherlock Holmes, who, unbeknownst to him, did everything which is reported in the fiction. So the idea is that Conan Doyle actually made up everything when he wrote the fiction, and if it happens that what he wrote is true, it's just a matter of chance, it's an accident. And within this assumption, I think that the problem was to find out how fiction could convey information, a content, truth in fiction. And different theories have been offered in order to try to explain that. The counterfactual theories, the intentionalist theories, the anti-intentionalist theories try to give different explanations on how this content is conveyed. But this assumption that the fiction are false or at least accidentally true has been already discussed in the literature. There are counterexamples to it in the literatures, but I want to add some other considerations to it. It is well known that authors of fiction use their own life and their personal experience to create fiction. And I have just to give you an example about fictional author, Italian fictional author, Carlo Emilio Gadda was very well known for being obsessed with the idea that his relatives can recognize themselves in his fiction and his fictional characters. This is something which may happen. And also, it happens that people complain against fiction authors for using their own personal experience in fiction. An example, a fictional example of it, is the very beginning of Woody Allen's Deconstructing Harry. In this fiction, at the very beginning, there is a woman who complains with a male writer that he has used their own relationship in the fiction. So this point is that this idea that fiction can characterize as true or false, as false or accidentally true, is not adequate. But in a sense, truth and falsity and the representational role as a role in fiction. And the role they have, and this is my proposal, is that there is a suspension of commitment to truth and falsity within fiction. This is the idea I want to defend, which is F star. As I told you, this is the idea I want to try to defend with you. Namely, that a work is fiction if and only if any commitment to its representational role is socially suspended and the work is offered for interpretation. This is the idea. Let me try to explain something about this idea. First of all, let's assume that the representational role is multifaceted and includes truth and falsity. So when I say that the representational role of fiction is socially suspended, this includes also that truth and falsity is socially suspended within fiction, which doesn't mean that the fiction cannot be true or false. It means that it is socially accepted that this role of fiction doesn't, that fiction is the representational role of the instrument of fiction is suspended within fiction. And the work is offered for interpretation. So with this proposal, I'm trying to give necessary and sufficient condition for fiction. And let me try to explain a little bit about the idea behind it. So what I'm saying that fiction is non-representational, is not representational. Fiction presents itself to the audience as it is. And there are obviously truths of fiction, but not truths in fiction. So there is this instrument which is presented to the audience. The author of fiction is responsible for the production of the fictional instrument, and the audience is responsible for the interpretation of the fictional instrument. Obviously, there might be more adequate or less adequate interpretation. I'm not discussing that. For that, there can be evaluative reasons to consider some interpretation more adequate than others. But in general, the idea is that fiction, the idea I want to try to present to you is this idea that fiction presents itself to the audience as it is, the author of fiction is responsible for the production of the instrument, and the audience is responsible for the interpretation of it. So, this is my proposal. According to which, as I told you, I try to give necessary and sufficient conditions for fiction. Now, what I'm now doing is to consider some objections which can be raised to my proposal. Objection which says, though, those conditions are not sufficient for fiction, and are not necessary for fiction. And I consider four objections which whose aim is to show that those conditions are not sufficient and to which are intended to show that they are not necessary for fiction. And I will reply to those objections. This is what I'm going to do. So, first objection, there are a lot of actions in common life which do not have any representational role. Consider, for example, producing sounds or words to clear our throat or to test a microphone. In those cases, we do not assume that those sounds or words have their traditional representational role. Or whenever someone do physical exercise, we do not interpret their movement as having a representational role. So this is, can be considered cases, counterexamples to my definition. Now, my reply is that those acts are not offered for interpretation. They are not done with within a communicative practice. Namely, whoever does this act doesn't socially expect that the act is interpreted somehow. Those same acts, if are presented within a fiction, instead are used for interpreting the fiction itself. So those acts, in my opinion, are not counterexample to my definition. Second counterexample, bullshit or fake news. So the producers of bullshit or fake news obviously doesn't commit herself to the truth or falsity of what she says. And in the case of fake news, even may want to deceive the interlocutor. I agree with that, but in this case, what I will say is that we should distinguish between the attitude of the producer and the social practice in which those acts are inserted. The social practice is in which they are inserted is a social practice in which commit to truth, which is a specific representational role. So the reason why we condemn those kind of acts is that even if the authors of that act doesn't commit herself to truth or falsity or to the traditional representational role, is performing in a social practice in which those roles are in charge, so in which truth and truth is a role. This is different from fiction, in which, according to me or to my interpretation, there is a general practice in which this commitment is suspended. Third counterexample. Consider the case in which the speaker tried to avoid commitment to truth. The speaker says, P, but I don't want to be held responsible for saying P, and I will deny that I ever said P. Now, this is an example which is a little bit difficult for me. It is not clear to me that a person who actually adopts this sentence is able, with this sentence, to avoid commitment to truth. And I don't want to defend this idea, but let's suppose that he does. In order to do it, he has to be explicit about the fact that it's not, at least be explicit about the fact that she's not committing herself to saying the truth and to be responsible for what he said. And this, the reason why he has to be explicit about it is exactly because he's talking in a social practice in which is instead supposed or held to be responsible for what she says and the truth of what she says. So again, I think that this is not a counterexample. This is not a case of fiction. Fourth counterexample. This counterexample is a little bit more subtle. Let's consider it. Suppose that I tell you my dream. If I tell you my dream, obviously, I'm not committed to the truth of what I tell you. And I probably offer it also for interpretation. There is a long tradition of giving psychoanalytic interpretations of dreams, and people, or even superstitious interpretations of dreams. So there are a lot of tradition in that. So in a sense, this can seem to be a counterexample. And another counterexample I want to consider with you can be hypotheses. Both hypotheses, simple hypotheses, for example, we look for the keys, we do not find the keys, and someone make an hypothesis on what the keys are. We are not committed to the truth of the hypothesis, and we give, obviously, the hypothesis to the others for interpretations. But even scientific hypotheses are actually have this characteristic. So they are presented without committing to truth, and they offer for interpretation to the other scientists. So, they're not cases of fiction, because in those cases, even if there is a similarity, there is a partial commitment to truth, Namely, if I tell you my dream, I'm committed to the fact, to the truth that I really dreamed it. That's a commitment to truth. And if I tell you an hypothesis, I committed to the truth of what follows from the hypothesis. As is well known, even scientific hypotheses are empirically tested, so there is this commitment to truth also for the hypothesis, at least for what follows from the hypothesis. So far I've tried to consider objections to the fact that what I presented is sufficient for fiction. So the idea that those conditions are not sufficient for fiction, and I try to explain to you why I think that these are not counterexamples. Now I'm going to consider two cases in which instead it can be argued that those conditions are not necessary for fiction. First, counterexamples, alleged assertions within fiction. This is the, you see, the very beginning of Anna Karenina. We can think that in these cases, the authors of fiction just assert something. His original representational role is of, and even if it is fiction. So it is fiction, and there is no suspension of the commitment to the representational role. Now, the point is that those cases are problematic cases in the sense that philosophers do not agree about how to interpret these sentences. So my answer actually changes, is quite neutral on the interpretation we give to such sentences. I would like to try to explain to you that whatever interpretation we give to these alleged assertions, my claim can be maintained. So how are they interpreted? First, interpretation. They are real assertions within fiction. Some philosophers argue that they are real assertions. The fictional author stops writing fiction and starts addressing the audience, expressing his or her own view about the real world. If that is the case, then using an expression used by Carey, what we call fiction is, a matter of fact, a patchwork of fiction and nonfiction. So those sentences are nonfiction, and therefore they are not a counterexample to my definition, if that is the correct interpretation of them. Second, a possible interpretation. They are not assertion at all. The authors provide information about the fictional world he's describing. Now, in this case, this is a fictional sentence. So there is still a suspension of the commitment to the representational role, and it is still offered for interpretation. So if that is the correct way to interpret those sentences, they are not a counterexample to my definition. Third interpretation, they are hybrid, in the sense that the authors provide statements that are both fictional and non-fictional. This is something which some philosopher argued. And in those cases, those sentences are ambiguous. They have a fictional content and a non-fictional content. Well, my definition concerns the fictional content, not the non-fictional one. So whatever interpretation we give to alleged assertions, do not seem to be a counterexample to my definition. Let me finish with the last counterexample. which is again an argument, an objection to the fact that I give necessary condition for fiction, which are historical fiction and biographical fictions. Sometimes authors of fiction write fiction trying to be loyal to the truth as much as possible. So in those cases, my definition seems to be problematic. But my reply is the following. Suppose that someone accuses the author of those fiction of defamation or ideological interpretation. The author can honestly defend herself, saying that the work is fiction, that she can take any license she wishes, even that of giving her own interpretation of biographical or historical facts. So even in those cases, it seems that the commitment to the representational role is not in play. So this is again my proposal, this proposal I've tried to defend with you. Thank you very much for your attention.
Collège de France, le savoir en illimité. Retrouvez tous nos contenus audio et vidéo sur notre site collège-de-france.fr, les plateformes de podcast et nos chaînes YouTube.